Right, we are starting about an hour late, but we are with you till 7 o'clock as we welcome you to the Wednesday edition.
Yes.
Of the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie. And I got to tell you, the news coming out of college basketball and the long-term effects of what this may do to the sport cannot be underestimated. What we do know now is that Louisville has been turned upside down. Rick Pitino has been put on leave without pay. They have to wait 10 days before they can fire him due to the logistics of his contract. Rick Pitino's attorney has already come out and said, my client did nothing wrong, and we fully expect the $44 million plus other clauses in the contract. First of all, it's absurd and ridiculous that a college basketball coach has a contract of $44 million. That let's just start right there with the freaking basics, okay? That right there is a problem. But with that said, this thing's going to get nasty. But here's, Doug, what I think's going to happen. I think that there's going to be a lot of talking to the FBI, and there's going to be a lot of immunity given. There's going to be all kinds of deals worked out because this is the tip of the iceberg. And I wonder right now, as we talk at nearly 4 o'clock Pacific time, on the 27th of September, how many other people in universities across the country are sweating bullets?
Well, first things first, you can get $44 million as a college coach?
That right there, we got a problem. That is a problem right there.
See ya. Next, snitches get stitches, Grant. There's going to be a lot of talking. So this is going to be – but I disagree with one point that you made, yeah. Grant. The point that – college basketball is going to suffer. They've been so many scandals from, you know, guys lying, the murder scandal at Baylor, point shaving. There's been so much. When it comes to the NCAA tournament and college basketball, I think that it survives. This is just another black eye for the NCAA.
Yeah, it will survive it, but it is a black eye. And the black eye may turn into two black eyes, two broken arms, and two broken legs.
Well said.
If and again, capital I, capital F, there are other programs that are
going to be. You know that.
I know, but, well, you have to be able to prove it. You can't just say, well, yeah, this university was doing it. You have to have proof.
I would say that this is just the tip of the iceberg because only one shoe company has been mentioned, I would think. I don't know. There's probably more. It might not be. It might just be one. But the point is that the investigations are going to go all over the place.
Not only that, but if I'm facing 80 years in prison, which some of these charges amount to, and I'm getting called in, and they're going, we're going to give you immunity, and if we're happy with your testimony or whatever, however that works, you will not have to face any jail time. I will say, well, you know, how long do you need me for? No, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean. I mean, I'm just trying to.
I do know what you mean.
You know, like if I'm Chuck Person, you know, and I'm just using him because I know him,
right?
Because he was he coached here. I'm going to say, and I think he played here for a short period. But my point is, you know, that's something that.
80 years? Come on. And what, Chuck has to be, I'm 47, Chuck has to be in his 50s.
So let's say you're off by 80 years. Let's say it's 10 years.
Yeah. Hey,
who's going to give 10, you know?
I'm just saying 10 minutes. I'm not trying to.
No. I'm with you. So I don't know where this ends up, but here's what I think we can agree. Yes, when the NCAA tournament starts, everyone's going to have their brackets out. We're going to be watching it. But this could have a negative impact on the sport for a period of time.
I would agree with that one. You got Auburn, Louisville losing prospects because a lot of the time it's if your coach moves teams, you have the ability to move. Well, if your coach is in something like this, so now they're going to lose. Louisville is going to be in a whole bunch of trouble. Auburn is giving back money for ticket sales, and that's just for each college on the surface level. It's going to be a deeper effect, obviously. And I would say, Grant, this is just the very, very beginning because they probably went out after the people who had the most egregious things that they could probably say, I can prove. To your point, we get in a room and, look, I got you dead to rights, but if you want to give me said, we can back off of that quite a bit. And I have a feeling that the dominoes will start to fall.
All right, here's the other deal. Louisville plays in a beautiful venue.
Yes, they do.
That opened in 2010. That was part of a $450 million project. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you can say anything you want about the heritage of Louisville basketball going back to Denny Crum or whatever you want.
Yep.
I don't care how far you want to go back. At the very least, this is going to make Louisville, assuming that they don't get the death penalty, this is going to make Louisville basketball non-competitive. Okay? They will not be able to compete because at the very least, after the FBI's investigation and the domino effect of the NCAA coming in, Louisville is either, and I'm just using Louisville now because of Rick Pitino and the athletic director, Louisville is either going to have two things happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're either going to get the death penalty,
right,
or they are going to lose an enormous amount of scholarships and bans on the NCAA tournament. It's not just going to be, because here's the deal. They were on and are on probation right now.
Yes.
Okay, so now when you're on probation.
Already.
This is going to take a national power.
Right.
And it is going to put them at the very bottom. So, I'm just speaking about the domino effect of all of this. This now takes Louisville's basketball program, and I don't even care who they name as the coach in the next 24 to 48 hours. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. You can go get the best coach that you want to because you're losing recruits and players.
They already left.
So,
all of their recruits have already left that were coming in 2018. They've already said we're going somewhere else.
And understand this, Grant, we'll pull it up, but you take a look at their schedule. They usually play a tough schedule.
Always.
So those recruits are gone. Now your coach is gone. So that means the systematic approach that you had in place that was probably conducive to the players that you had is gone. Yeah, they hit the bottom, and it happens extremely fast.
Right. So Louisville basketball I'll give you an example. SMU was never great in football, but for a period of time when they had the Pony Express in the backfield,
yep,
they were good. And they got the death penalty. And when SMU was reinstated, their football program was reinstated, I don't know if they could have won against a high school team across the street in Highland Park, Texas. All right? So let's just call it the way it is.
Yeah, once something like that happens, and you can relate it to the professional ranks with, you know, what happened here with the Kings blowing up, and it takes a long time for you to get that culture and all of that back, because it takes one player to trust you, but that is an absolute problem. You haven't seen SMU recover since then, and you mentioned it. I mean, an absolute juggernaut with the Pony Express. So this is going to be a tough one to swallow for all people that are, you know, Louisville fans.
You know, again, they are at the bottom of the barrel, or they have just fallen from near the top, not the top, but near the top of their conference to the very bottom of it.
My question to you, Grant, is what ultimately does this mean for, got to be mid-60s, late-60s, Rick Pitino? What does it mean for him?
You need to separate this into a couple of different columns.
Okay.
Basketball coach.
Gotcha.
Then the person, the sex scandal, everything that happened with him at Louisville. You cannot have a conversation without talking about the blemishes on his resume, which stick out. And so what does it mean? I personally don't think you'll ever see Rick Pitino coach again. And, you know, people say, well, he'll go to ESPN. No, he won't. No one's going to hire him.
Even if he's cleared.
Well, I was just going to get to that.
Okay.
In our country, you are innocent, right? By the system
until
that we're going
guilty.
By until you are proven guilty. But I have been listening to a lot of talk shows today. I've been trying to get prepared to come on the air and talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the FBI and or Louisville cannot come up with any evidence, in other words, could you prove that Joe Paterno knew what was going on in the locker room at Penn State? All right? And so the point I'm trying to make is,
that's a good comparison, actually.
Can you prove, and I'm not saying, when I say you, I don't mean Doug Christie.
No, I
can
you.
The university prove that Rick Pitino was aware of the cheating that went on at his program. Now, you mentioned to me yesterday, what was the name of the standout recruit that had chosen Louisville? And then he said, gee, how did we end up getting him at the last minute?
I didn't know his name.
Well, whatever. But my point is, I'm just now I'm going common sense here. I'm a famous head coach at a great basketball program like Louisville, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, a top recruit falls into my lap at the last minute when I was not expecting. Do you not think the first thing that would come to someone's mind would be impropriety here?
Brian Bowen.
That's it. Yep. Brian Bowen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you.
Yep.
Even if you're a first-year head coach, you're not sitting there going, boy, are we lucky. You're like, okay, I need to investigate. How did this happen?
Right.
Okay.
Well, you're talking five-star. That's right. top of the line.
That's right.
Yeah.
When he was complete, when Rick Pitino himself said, basically, that was the last thing he thought was going to happen.
Right.
At that point, that's a major red flag.
It should be.
Okay. So if Louisville cannot actually prove that Rick Pitino knew about this, don't you think that the basketball fans across the country and the sporting public are going to say, Rick, stop it already. You know, you're also telling me that you didn't know that there was basically, for lack of a better term, a brothel 5 feet from your office. No, I'm serious.
The dorms, first level.
Okay. You're also telling me you didn't know about that?
Right.
Come on. All right. Now, I guess what I'm saying is he survived that.
And that's the problem.
But he ain't going to survive this.
The problem is, Grant, in my estimation, as you're talking and I'm thinking, he thinks he's the Teflon Don because everything is sliding off of him. Because if I'm on probation, Grant, and someone drops a five-star recruit in my lap and I have to do absolutely nothing, you don't think that I'm going to ask, how did this happen, and just make sure I'm on probation? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
And again, I want to see him walk into a room and take a lie detector test. And I'm fully aware that, you know, polygraph tests are not always. But I still want to see it. I want to see Rick Pitino take a lie detector test. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if he does that and he passes it, then I might change my opinion. There is no way you can convince me that Rick Pitino did not know about the cheating that went on to get this recruit. I'm sorry. Not for a guy that's been in the business as long as Rick Pitino.
And on top of that, if you're going to get a recruit like that, you're going to learn about him. There's going to be conversations. You're going to find out. There's going to be some talking. And Rick Pitino, when I look at him, he comes off as a very particular man. He's very measured. The way he dresses, everything lends me to the fact, in the way that his teams play and how he goes at his players, that not a lot's going to escape him. So that's where I run into the problem is, really, you didn't know, you didn't research at all. I find it hard to believe. We'll find out in the days to come, but it's really tough for me to sit here and go, yeah, I believe five-star, he didn't know anything about it.
All right, other news today, both general manager Vlade Divac and head coach Dave Yeager have had their contract extended. In Dave Yeager's case, his option was picked up on his final year. And in Vlade's contract runs in sync with Dave Yeager, which to me is a no-brainer.
No doubt. Congratulations to Coach and Vlade. Well-deserved, gentlemen. Continue to build what I believe is going to be an incredible situation for Sacramento Kings and the Sacramento Kings fans to be proud of, because what I'm seeing and what's going on, it really looks good.
Absolute no-brainer here. And I know that there are people who say, well, gee, why did you have to do it now? It doesn't make any sense. Dave Yeager's only coached 1 year. Why not do it after next year? Well, and you could, but the message that they want to send out to all these young players,
yep,
and basically the NBA community, is that, you know, we understand that there's been a lot of change in our organization.
Yep.
And we know that there's been a lot of coaches that have been hired and fired. Well, we're putting a message out that we are extremely happy with the people that are running our basketball team. And we are not only happy, but we're going to show you how happy we are by giving them this extension.
a level of stability.
Yes, stability.
Oddly enough, yesterday a gentleman called in and drew a comparison between the 49ers and the Kings. Do you remember that call, Grant?
Yep.
And both Shanahan and Lynch, six-year deals, they run parallel, and now you, kind of the same thing with the Kings. And it does give a level of stability to people here and around the country.
All right. We'll come back. We'll take your phone calls. We have got Lincoln Kennedy that's coming up on the show. We've got a lot of football that we are going to go over because tomorrow we do have Thursday night football, and it's not a bad matchup, so we'll talk about that. Lincoln Kennedy at 4:30, Chris Landry from Landry Football, and the Landry Report at 5, right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. So I want to get back to the moves today by the Kings. I think it's extremely important. You used the word continuity. I think it's extremely important to make it known that these are the people that are going to be running our franchise. Mm-hmm. And now there are no more questions. All right, Vladdy is running the basketball team. Dave Yeager is coaching the basketball team, and that's the way it's going to be. Now people always say, "Well, gee, you know, they can fire him." Well, yeah, you could, but the point is, that's the furthest thing from anyone's mind right now.
Yeah, and you know what? It also sends a message about the systematic approach of what the Kings are going to be and who they are going to be. That, first of all, Vivek is happy with what Vlade is doing, and Vlade is happy with what Dave is doing. And that in and of itself adds stability to the relationship with agents, with all the different people that go into helping garner players and get free agents and get them here to Sacramento. It's just a solidifying moment that I think speaks volumes for the Kings.
And I said this, I think I've said this to you, and I've said it to a lot of other people. I understand this is a bottom line business. And I understand that, you know, basically, you are evaluated at the end of the year. You're evaluated on how did you do? How many games did you win and how many games did you lose? And so someone asked me, I was out and about, you know, about the criticism from the national media. Actually, I'll take this back. It was for a story they're doing in the Sacramento News and Review.
Okay.
And I said, you know what? I said, criticism is part of professional sports, and you're always going to get criticism, and the Kings have deserved the criticism that they've received in the past, and the only way that criticism is going to go away is to win. It doesn't really matter if you draft this guy or that guy. If at the end of 2 or 3 years from now you're still a bad team, you're still going to get criticized, and you should get criticized. I said, so I've always said this. Who cares what the media is saying about you? Who cares? At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what Adrian Wojnarowski says or Mark Stein or whomever.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
No.
It has nothing to do with anything. And so forget about criticism. Go out and win some games.
Right.
Go out and turn things around.
Yeah, and that's why it's important when you make a move like with Coach Yeager, because it begins to solidify that, look, the outside can say whatever in the hell they want. This is us in here, and we are going to go out, and we're going to face everybody, and we're going to face the world. We're going to build a team. We're going to build an organization that is able to compete
Amen.
With whoever.
And so and you're absolutely correct. So with it being a bottom-line business, if this team, I think I'm comfortable in saying this, if this team at the end of next season, okay?
Right.
If the first number in their win total is not a 4.
Okay. That's about right.
Then we got a problem.
Yes, we
okay?
do.
So not this year.
Right, not this year.
At the end of next season, yes. The first numeral
should be
in the standings needs to be a 4.
I would agree. And
okay.
Obviously, if it's a 5, well, whoa.
Okay, I understand. But
it needs to be a 4.
That's right. And that's how the criticism will cease, is when you get to that level. When you start winning half your games,
yep.
then and here's the difference. When the Kings do get to that point, assuming that they do, and I believe they will, but again, I've been wrong before and you've been wrong
yes,
before.
No doubt.
Assuming that is the case, they'll all be ascending together as a unit and as a group, with maybe you lose a guy maybe here because of a contract. Well, then you gain a guy here, but your nucleus stays the same.
Yes, it
which
does.
What you had when you played with the guys,
yep.
And you had an 8-year run. Now, you weren't here for all 8 years, but the Kings had 8 consecutive years of making the playoffs. That's what Vladdy's trying to do. He's not trying to just make the playoffs for 1 year. Like, people last year didn't want the Kings to make the trade because, well, they were only – two or three games out of the eighth spot, and they're like, well, what the hell good would have that done? You wouldn't have had De'Aaron Fox. You wouldn't have had Justin Jackson. You wouldn't have had Harry Giles. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So what you're trying to do is to be good altogether for a long period of time.
One of Vlade's, and this is just me talking as his friend, and I know him. One of his greatest attributes, Grant, and you may follow me on this, is his ability to have foresight. He's not seeing for right now. He's seeing for the future. He's seeing for building something that may be here long after we're here. And that's the type of person that he is. He wants to do something that is going to stand the test of time, that Sacramento Kings players, fans, ex-players, all of those people can be absolutely proud of.
All right. What do you think about that, folks? Because, again, it is a bottom line business, and I know many of you, and I'm not going to tell you shouldn't or you should. You can do whatever you want.
Right.
Many of you are going to judge this team this year on wins and losses. I know you're going to say, geez, Grant, you say this every year. And you know what? I raised my hand in the air. I have said this for the last few years. I am not judging this team this year on just how many wins they have and how many losses they have. I'm going to judge this team. Whereas when we get to March and April, they better be a hell of a lot better than they are in November and December. Mm-hmm. And when we get to March and April, I want to be able to talk about the young players the same way you and I talked about the young players when we got to March and April, and particularly April last year.
And from my approach, how I'm going to judge them is, first things first, I want to see them play hard every single night.
No exceptions.
And I want to see incremental improvements, which goes to your point. By the end of the season, those incremental improvements should go across the board with the players. And if you see that as an organization, you will be moving in the right direction.
The one thing about all of this as we get to the break, and we'll talk about this when we come back, and we'll also talk some Raider football with Lincoln Kennedy when we come back, is that you don't need Doug and I to come on the air. You'll see it.
Yeah.
You know, when you say we're not going to shove it down your throat, you'll be able to see it. You'll know. We're not going to have to sell anything. You'll know.
If you don't see it, we'll be talking about it too.
That's right. But because the fans saw it in March and April last year.
Yes, they did.
They saw it.
Yeah, it was plain to see.
All right. The Raider debacle and a look ahead to Denver when we come back with Lincoln Kennedy.
This is Jay Johnson with your top stories on Sports 1140. We begin with the news in Louisville as basketball head coach Rick Pitino and AD Tom Jurich have been placed on paid leave as it's believed Pitino will not be reinstated post-investigation. In the NBA, your Sacramento Kings have extended contract of GM Vlade Divac and picked up head coach Dave Yeager's fourth-year option, which will keep the front office and coaching staff in place through the 2019-2020 season. And in the NFL, according to reports, Justin Timberlake is finalizing a deal with the league to be the performer of the halftime show in the Super Bowl this year. Time is 4:34. Jenny King Cleaning, franchise ownership is a reality. Be your own boss. Call 916-364-9800 today. Those are your top stories. I'm Jay Johnson on your home of Oakland Raiders football. Now more of the Grant Napier Show.
It is 4:34. Time to watch a Sacramento Republic FC host Real Monarchs SLC tonight. That is right, tonight, 7:30 at Papa Murphy's Park. Tickets at SacRepublicFC.com.
All right, we've got the Raiders in a huge game coming up on Sunday. Anytime you play a divisional opponent, it's a huge game, especially when you look at this AFC West, because the winner on Sunday is going to be in great shape. The loser is not necessarily going to be in bad shape, but with how well the Chiefs look, and again, they play Monday night at home against Washington, you could end up being two games out, all right? The loser of this game on Sunday could end up being two games out through 4 weeks of the season.
Let me tell you, Grant, of all the divisions that you might want to be playing around with being two games out, this is not one of them, because all these teams, this is the first divisional game, they're going to start facing each other. And as that happens, boy, those two games are going to mean something special. So you got to keep pace. This is going to be a big one for the Raiders. And at some point, they're going to have to go on the road this year, and they're going to have to start winning some ball games.
There's no doubt about that, because you know what happened on Sunday was a debacle.
Oh boy!
I mean, you know, I don't know how else to
That's why when we do talk to Link, it's going to be interesting because, you know, he gets to watch it right from the sideline. And that is that's a different view, you know, because we do that with the Kings.
All right. It is time to talk to Lincoln Kennedy. You hear him on each and every Raider broadcast right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Link, you know, I was just telling Doug, I got to tell you, forget about just the Raiders for a moment. It's been a long time since I've watched a football game where one team outplayed another team as badly as what I saw on Sunday. And so the question is, how on earth do you explain what happened?
The best way to try to summarize what you saw Sunday night is that the Raiders didn't show up. They got beat at every position, on every level, by a team that really stuck it to them. I mean, that's the only way that I can really summarize it. They just didn't show up.
You know, Link, when you look at Crabtree and you think, okay, that it sounds like they were talking some mess to Josh Norman. I don't know about football players, but I know when I played, if I would afterwards hear something like Josh Norman said, those are the type of guys that you got to shut up. Now, obviously, he shut those guys up because they only caught two balls amongst both of them. What's the mindset maybe of both of the big-time wide receivers for the Raiders right now?
Well, I've never played with a wide receiver that no matter how many people were covering them, they came back to the huddle and said they were open.
Right.
So we always know that to be true, okay? So
yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind that there's a ton of trash talkers out there. I'd be surprised if Amari Cooper was considered one of those trash talkers, but I definitely know that Michael Crabtree is.
Okay.
So the thing about it, my point is this, is that, you know, hey, you know, when you talk trash, you got to back it up. If
yes,
you have
sir.
A poor game, they're going to be somebody that's going to be in your ear.
Yep.
That's sports. That just happens. So there's nothing really you can do about it. And here's the thing. You have a team that was probably reading a ton of their own press, being the Oakland Raiders, that for whatever reason just thought they were going to go back to the nation's capital. We're going to have a good old time on Sunday Night Football primetime, put everything together. And like I said, they didn't show up. They got beat on every level, and they got beat decisively. So, you know, when it's all said and done, the spoilers go to the victor, right? So who's ever victorious standing on that mountain is going to talk the most trash.
Here's what surprised me the most about that game, and I really mean this. The Raiders' offensive line is now regarded as one of the very best in the NFL, and they were just manhandled. And so you being a former offensive tackle, explain that to me, please.
Two reasons. First of all, the other team wanted it more. And the reason why I say that is because I've always believed in momentum and body language. And in the second play of the game, Derek Carr throws an interception. That sort of takes away a little bit of the momentum. Now you're sitting off, you're watching the rest of the defense have to go out there and try to stop the opposing team. And Redskins march down the field and get a touchdown. So now Derek Carr comes out in the next series and he feels pressed to try to make something happen. Now, whether it's the receivers not getting open, whether it's Derek not going through what his reads, whatever it was, I noticed five offensive linemen, four of them were in an up stance, Rodney Hudson, obviously the center's got to have his hand on the ball. But the Washington Redskins, when they had that series, when they've got two sacks on back-to-back plays,
right?
They did bull rushes. What that means, they ran down the middle of the man and they collapsed the pocket. And I don't think either one of those four that got rushed were prepared for it. They weren't mentally and physically prepared for whatever reason, because they all collapsed the same way. And they did it not only one play, but they basically did it the second play to where they were a little bit stronger. But because Derek was standing tall in the pocket collapsed around them. So you don't want to pass the blame to one, you know, group or whatever over another. But I will say this, the receivers didn't do their part. Derek could have done better with his reads. The offensive line could have held up at the point a lot better. There's still a good offensive line. They just have to remember there's going to be times where they can't just show up and assume they're going to get a win. They have to go out there and play.
Well, Link, you just took me in the huddle with the wide receivers, and I got you. The prima donna comes back, and he tells me, look, man, I'm open every time. Now, take me in the huddle with the offensive line, because you would think with this type of offensive line, it's like, look, man, we're not going to get manhandled. Like, let's go get this, but it never happened. What's the mindset there?
The thing is, Doug, you already know this. You can't turn it on and off
sir.
Like a light switch.
Yeah.
You either bring it from the beginning or it's hard to get back. Now, there are certain times where momentum can change.
Yes, sir.
There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
And you can feel a little energy, a little burst of energy. In this case, let's go back to the game last week, and let's say, how about after the first muff punt? when they got the ball back in the plus zone, how they could sort of change the momentum and get things going.
Right.
But now it becomes a collective team effort, because once you put seven on the board, you're an anti, I'm an anti-offensive player. I'm sitting on the sideline, went to tell my defense, my special team, go out there, handle, get the ball back so we can get back in this. But they march down the field and score again. So now you feel even more pressure. And the reason why you mentally diminish over the game is because, let's take it for consideration, your defense is out, Raiders' defense is out there on the field. They've got them backed up. It's second down and 19. They throw a screen that hits them for 60-something yards. It's demoralizing.
Yes.
It's exhausting. And it's exhausting to a level to where you don't necessarily know how you could come back, because all the energy that you're exuding to get back into the game seems for naught because the other team, you know, your defense can't get off the field. Now, we knew the Raiders' defense was going to be an issue. We knew that coming into the season. However, because they were winning and because the offense was doing fairly well, it was covered up. It was masked. It was a Band-Aid over that gaping wound. This time, the Raiders had to play catch-up, and their offense wasn't all on the same page. So whether Derek Carr was focused, not all the time the offensive line was focused. If the offensive line was focused, not all the time the receivers were focused. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's sort of a cascading, sort of a slinky downstairs effect where you can't win because you're not getting any momentum really, really going.
Did you just say slinky?
Yes, he did.
I don't know if everyone knows what a slinky is, but that was well played.
That's all, well, you guys got a school. That's your
part.
I'm the analyst.
Amen. So now it's on to Denver. Divisional game, always important, but the loser of this game could very well wake up on Tuesday morning and be two games out of the lead through 4 weeks, so let's get right into this game. And we know Denver did not play well against Buffalo, similarly what we saw with the Raiders, but we also know Denver's defense can give you fits. Give me your thoughts on this matchup.
The no-fly zone has shut this team down before. Now, last year at the end of the year, without Derek Carr, they really took it to the Raiders. So that should be fresh in their mind. The time before that, they had fun running the ball because they had a great deal of success. I think they ran the ball on the side in front of me over 200-plus yards the time, and they got a win. And it was I think it was either Sunday night or Thursday night game, one of those games. But it was a good time for the Raiders. So they thought they can do it. It's going to be – now, Denver's defense is playing the run a little bit better than it played it last year. And we know what their secondary is capable of. This is going to be the big test for Marshall Newhouse at right tackle against Von Miller.
Oh, boy.
And here's the thing. The thing that they're also doing is the Broncos are, you know, they've got a couple other outside linebackers that are pretty doggone good, too. So it's not just Von Miller you have to worry about. It's going to be a big test for the offense. It really is. The thing is that you want to try to play relaxed. You want to try to play within your scheme. And you're going into hostile territory against a division rival with a number of things and a very important division game, because now you have to keep pace with Kansas City, who doesn't look to be slowing down anytime soon. So it's a very critical game, and we'll see how the Raiders handle it this weekend.
You know, Link, you just mentioned the fact that Denver has been playing the run better than last year. So if that's the first thing that they take away, obviously the passing game didn't work that well last weekend. And you mentioned something I think that's particularly important is staying to the game plan. What about the ability to panic here in those type of situations? Speak to keeping your head and staying to the game plan.
Well, Doug, you can't panic. And here's the thing. You're going to have a bigger day out of your receiving core.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. Crabtree, Amari Cooper. If Liquid, you know, Aqib Talib, and the other corners that are in Denver, somebody's going to have to win a battle when it's time to get open. Somebody's going to have to win, whether it's a crossing route or whatever it is. Somebody's going to have to win. And the truth of the matter is, like last week, the secondary really took it to the Raiders for the fact that they can only rush four and get pressure, and they were allowed to drop seven and play a zone man combination, which Raiders receivers struggled with. Now somebody's going to have to stand up and be counted, and whether it's Jared Cook, whether it's, you know, whomever on the Raiders offense, somebody's going to have to stand up and do their job. But you still have to stick with your game plan, Doug. Don't get away from who you are.
Right.
This is a team that Derek Carr has had an offense that Derek Carr has had a lot of control over and knows pretty through and through the check with me. Now, you just say everyone in that offense has to go out and execute a lot better than they did in D.C.
Link, you say stick to your game plan. Agreed. Or be who you are.
Yeah.
Who they were last year was throwing the ball. Right now, there's a bunch of drops. How do those drop passes look in your eyes?
You know what? Well, it looks pathetic, to be honest. You're a professional. That's the equivalent of a shooting guard not being able to make a free throw in basketball.
Uh-oh.
But it's one of those things where I don't really know, because I'm not a receiver, I don't really know how you correct that. I know that, you know, watching Monday Night Football, I saw Jerry Valdir, the right tackle for the Arizona Cardinals, getting beat by Lawrence several times. I know how to correct that.
Right.
I know what Valdir was doing wrong. But I don't know how you get a receiver to catch it, because the great ones that I played around, the Jerry Rices and the Tim Browns, you know, I remember Timmy told me one time, he's like, look, if you touch it with two hands, you should catch it. There's no reason.
No doubt.
No excuse. So, you know, I don't know if it's mental. I don't know if it's physical. I don't know what it is. I don't know how you get over that hump. I know that it's becoming a problem. It's becoming a problem, especially for Cooper, because Derek Carr makes a conscious effort to try to get Cooper the ball. Mm-hmm. He wants him to get involved with the offense. He wants him to light things up. And they offensively, they make a conscious effort to either go to, if Cooper's being double teamed, to go to Crabtree. I mean, they go down the list with all their stars. You got to do your part and catch it.
Mm-hmm. Boy, isn't that the case?
Man, I'm telling you.
Hey, Link, last question. You were on some really good teams in Oakland. When you had a dud of a game, was it easy to bounce back and forget about it and move on?
Yes. You got to have a very short memory. I remember I've always had a saying that no one's above the boo. And I remember there were a couple games at Oakland Stadium where we were booed by our home fans. And I would walk up, yep, boo, we stink. We sucked it up, we stink. I remember, I want to say it was our Super Bowl year. I want to say it was our 2002 year that we lost to the Arizona Cardinals, and we shouldn't have, at home.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some of the boo birds then, but then you had to bounce back. Sometimes you can get yourself in a funk where you try to feel pressed and try to figure out when things are going wrong. But really, in all athletics, and I think Doug will agree, you have to have a short memory. There's going to be times, because you have to remember, those guys on the other side of the field get paid too.
Yes, they do.
It's not like they got a bunch of jakes that they just signed up off the street. They got some players too, so
yeah.
Give them some credit. You're not always going to be the best team. You hope to be the best team on game day, but it doesn't always happen like that.
Link, we'll talk to you next week, man. Always good to have you. Safe trip to Denver.
Pleasure's mine, Nate. Doug, be well, guys.
Appreciate you, buddy.
All right, Lincoln Kennedy joining us right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. This team, they're not a young team anymore in terms of not being in big games. They've been in enough big games now. They, you know, the fact that Lincoln said that they weren't ready to play on a national stage, national TV, concerns me. But I'm wondering if before they even got on the plane Friday to fly to the East Coast, that they weren't already thinking about Denver. And I wonder if Denver, before they got on the plane to fly to Buffalo, wasn't already thinking about the Raiders. Because, you know, Trevor Siemian did not play well in Buffalo, and the Bills are not a good team. So here's what I do know about this week. The loser is going to be facing an uphill battle, even though it's only going to be one quarter of the season in the books.
You know, Grant, that is absolutely correct. When I listen to what you just said, what I relate to a Raiders team who goes and they're not prepared, it's like somebody who gets new money. They don't know how to act with it. They haven't been good. All of a sudden last year, they jumped onto the scene. Now you got to come back. And I always talk about the second time around, Grant. You have to be ultra professional. You got to be on it. It has to be serious. You can still have fun. You were around us all the time. We had a lot of fun. But when the ball was thrown up, you got to be ready to go. And I would agree with you. That would be worrisome. Both of these teams are in a similar situation. The best thing that could have happened to the Raiders was the Broncos went back to the Bills and absolutely beat the pants off of them, but they didn't. That means that the Broncos are going to be ready. This will be
teams are in the same boat.
Same boat,
right.
Same record.
This is a little bit more of an important game for Denver for the simple reason that they're home.
Yes.
All right. The fact that they're home, they got a little bit more pressure on them. If they lose this game, they know they still have to go to Oakland. And yeah, so I'm not saying it's not a big game for the Raiders. It is, but it's a little bit bigger for the home team.
You know, and Link said something too. He used the word pressing. Are they going to get out there and press? And
well, if they do, they're going to lose.
And I think that we see a bit of that from them, because the one thing in this one, I don't know how Marshawn is going to play, because the run defense for Denver is so good.
I'll make a prediction right now. I'll say he'll be entirely ineffective in this game.
See, if he's able to do anything, and I would say that how that could happen is you established short dinks and dunks to your receivers, then establish the run. If you come out and try to establish the run, I don't know that that will work with the Broncos.
Well, I'll back up and use – and again, sometimes you can get in trouble, but when I look at the game that was played 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
All right.
So you're talking about Jets?
No, I'm talking about the Broncos-Cowboys game.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay. You were just asking me about Marshawn Lynch.
Yes.
All right. There's a running back for Dallas who's pretty good.
Oh.
His name is Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, I heard of him.
All right. He had 8 yards. Excuse me. I take that back. He ran a total of – what did you see what his total was?
Did you say 80 yards?
8 yards.
Oh.
Eight. That was the total for the game. So the Denver defense.
How many carries?
The Denver defense, 9.
Oh.
8 carries. Now, I think the strategy of Denver's defense is going to be a little bit different because I think their strategy was we don't have a lot of confidence in Dak Prescott to be able to throw the ball down the field and beat us, and they were right. I think the strategy for Denver may be a little bit different, but here's what I do know. Say what you want about what happened in Buffalo last week. Say what you want about what happened in Washington last week. Here's what I know for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not even guessing.
Right.
The Denver defense is superior to Oakland's defense.
No, come on.
Okay. Yeah. It's superior. So what I'm saying is the Raiders offense is better than Denver's offense.
Should be.
But in a game like this, it's the defense that in all likelihood is going to win a game. And I got to tell you, I don't like this matchup for the Raiders because of the defense of Denver. That would concern me big time if I'm Jack Del Rio.
Yes, if I'm Jack Del Rio. The one thing, and I meant to bring this up with Link, the one thing that Jack Del Rio has in his back pocket, and you know this better than anybody, Grant, because you've been around coaches, he has the ability to go in there and rip them a new butthole, and he will have their entire focus locked in because of the display, and this is a divisional game on the road. All of those things. If you're going to see the best Raiders team, this would be the time for them to show up.
Now, the one success that Dallas did have offensively was with their tight end. Jason Witten caught 10 passes for 97 yards. And so maybe, and again, I'm just saying maybe, this is a game where Derek Carr is not able to stay in the pocket with the pressure and throw the ball long down the field. He may have to dink and dunk. And you know what? As long as you're picking up first downs, that's okay.
Yes, and that could establish the ability to catch some passes because if you're dinking and dunking, you're probably going to get a lot more passes out there, so guys are going to get more reps. The only thing when I think about that, Grant, is – I haven't watched Denver enough. Do they press up and do they play man, load the box?
They come at you in waves with a lot of different types of defenses.
So that may be what you see is, look, Marshawn's not going to beat us, Derek Carr. We haven't seen guys are dropping passes. Tlaib, lock them down and let's go. This is going to be a really interesting matchup for the Raiders because I think it's going to say a lot about them for the rest of the season going forward.
If the Raiders lose this game, I'm just saying if, all right, they are going to – they're not going to be talked about through the first quarter of the season as one of the elite teams. They'll be talked about as a good team, but they won't be talked about an elite team. In other words, and in my opinion, if the Raiders lose this game, and I'm saying if, I'm not saying they are going to, but I'm saying I think they will. But if they lose this game and go 2-2, in my opinion, it will be considered a big disappointment when you look at their schedule. Oh, yeah, and by the way, the fact that they started off 2-0.
Yeah, starting off 2-0, and, you know, there was Super Bowl talk, a lot of can they maybe overtake the Patriots and a lot of different things, KC. And this is something that you got to take into consideration, hey, Grant. 1-5 against them with Derek Carr. That's worrisome.
The Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, you got to watch out.
You can't make a run for the Super Bowl until you make the playoffs.
How about that?
So yeah. we need to back up and talk about that first. And a game
first
like this,
first.
At the end of 17, you might look back at week 4 and go, oh boy.
Oh,
remember the game they lost in overtime at Denver in week 4? That kept them out of the playoffs.
With the AFC West.
This is a huge, huge, huge game. Maybe the biggest game on the card this week. Doug and I will come back. We'll talk more football with Chris Landry, Doug Christie. We'll be right back. You have a read to do here or are you all good, Doug?
Me?
You all good?
Yeah, I'm
all right. I just want to make sure.
Actually, since you offered me, it's 4:55. Time to watch Sacramento Republic FC host Real Monarchs SLC tonight. That's right, tonight, 7:30 at Papa Murphy's Park. Tickets at sacrepublicfc.com. Thank you for that, Grant. I appreciate it.
No problem. 6:55 a.m. in Bangkok. If you're keeping score at home, we'll be right back.